I ain't gonna be around forever, Russell. When I go, I want you to bury me on this hill, under this shade tree, with this hang glider. That way, when zombie times come, I'll be able to attack from above.
Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the Z-Realm podcast. I am Marty. I am here in my home in Greensboro, and I am joined by my co-hosts, who will introduce themselves now.
I am Olga, and I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
And I'm KMO, speaking to you from the Eco Village Training Center on the farm in Summertown, Tennessee.
And we're gathered here for episode 28 to talk about to continue our conversation about the really amazing radio drama / podcast that is We're Alive. And we've all three been listening to it. I don't know if we're all... I think Olga's probably up to date. I'm very, very nearly... I'm into the conclusion of the final season and just about to start with the beginning of the third season, which just started recently. And KMO, I don't know if you're caught up yet. Are you?
I'm bringing up the rear. I'm pretty close to being done with season two. I think I'm in chapter 21. And let me just preface this discussion by saying, way back when, probably in the early 80s, I was living in Kansas City, Missouri, and on Saturday mornings, I would tune in to the local NPR station because they were running a serialized radio drama of Star Wars. And, you know, why would you tune into a radio drama of Star Wars when you could just watch the movie? But this was an expanded story, and there's lots of, you know, the scene in Star Wars where Darth Vader comes in to interrogate Princess Leia, and there's that floating ball droid with the hypodermic needle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that she's going to get injected with some drug and interrogated. Well, in this radio drama, we hear that whole interrogation.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was just great. And so I listened to that whole thing over the course of many weeks, and then it was over. But just as it ended, they started a radio drama of Lord of the Rings, which you can imagine kept me busy for a while. And that's when I really got hooked on radio dramas. And then I started getting into older radio dramas. I would get them on tape from the library. There's an old, probably is dead by now, but a voice actor named E.G. Marshall, and I've heard so many of his radio dramas, and I just loved all that stuff, but it had been completely out of my head for the longest time, many years. And so this radio drama of We're Alive, I mean, I've heard a few audiobooks and such, but this is really the first ongoing serialized thing, fictional story, that I have listened to in an audio format in a long time, and I'm really glad to be back at it.
I remember seeing everyone gathered around the television. I expected a bombing or maybe even another attack on U.S. soil. Part of me was planning for the worst, but nothing could have prepared me for what I saw.
We're receiving reports from all around the Los Angeles area and downtown San Diego. Men and women attacking each other, biting and thrashing at one another. Local law enforcement is now responding. Oh my God, they're attacking the police officers. The attackers seem to have no hesitation as
a... What the hell is going on? That's only like 20 miles from here. Do you think it's going to reach us?
Hello?
Michael, it's Lieutenant Angel. Where are you?
I'm at school right now. What's going on?
We need you to come to the unit right away.
Is this about what's on the TV?
I'm stuck in traffic, so I have no idea. I've just got a phone call from the commander, and now I'm calling you. How long till you can get here?
Maybe 30 minutes, but I don't have my uniform.
Don't worry about those. We have a couple spare in the unit. Just get there as fast as you can.
All right, I'm on my way.
And so we talked a little bit about it last week and played some clips from it. And it's a zombie apocalypse story. And in this particular zombie apocalypse story, which is set in the Los Angeles area, we start off with these three soldiers who are seemingly on leave, but they've all been recalled because of this emergency. But because the zombie apocalypse has overtaken society so quickly, most of their unit does not assemble, and they end up just Angel, who is actually a lieutenant and should be in charge because he's the highest-ranking person there, Michael, who actually does take charge because he's got just the sort of natural charismatic quality of leadership that often emerges, you know, in these fall of civilization stories. Somebody who was nothing before suddenly rises to the top because they, you know, they are given the opportunity to show their true qualities. And then we also have Saul. We don't know a whole lot about Saul, but he's got a bit of attitude, and he too is capable. And they set off for Angel's girlfriend's apartment building to rescue her. I think with a zombie apocalypse narrative like this, once you get past the basic premise, which is familiar to all of us, then we get into the expertise of the individual writer or creative team. And so in this instance, there were two co-creators. We have Casey Whalen and who's the other guy? Shane Salk?
Shane Salk.
Yeah.
Correct.
Who plays Angel.
Casey, at least, is an actual soldier, or as we'll learn soon enough, he was an engineer and an engineer for the military. And so we get a lot of authentic-seeming technical military jargon, and we get, I think, a soldier's eye view of how to respond to a crisis situation like this. That, you know, solid lines of authority have to be established. You know, there has to be credible leadership. And when the chain of command doesn't mean so much, then really it is experience and it is charisma that determines who is going to be the leader. And so, as Olga will point out in the interview that we'll play shortly, we don't see a whole lot of what's going on in terms of how the zombie apocalypse is unfolding in the world at large. But what we get from time to time are influxes of new characters who come in and tell their story about how they got there and what was going on. And in this way, we get little bits and pieces. And then the characters go out into the world because they need things to survive. You know, they need fuel, they need supplies, they need water.
You hear that? How can you hear anything over that alarm?
It's getting closer.
Come on, stop pulling. Guys?
They're coming!
Shoot the ones dragging down the barbed wire.
I'm trying, hear it?
Right.
There's too many.
They're on fire.
She's not stopping.
Aim
Help.
For the head.
Somebody.
Come on, Angel. What the hell are you doing?
It's jammed.
Yeah, no shit.
They're over the fence.
Exactly. Get inside.
Where?
The vault. Move it.
Saul, what did you do?
Saul, open the door.
We gotta go. Guys.
Angel, give me your rifle. Let go. Just let go of it. I'm gonna fix it, all right?
All right.
Hey, look at me. I want you to take a deep breath and have a seat.
How the hell are there so many? So fast.
Those are what you saw on the freeway?
Yeah, but there were only like 7 of them. That was like 100.
The episodes are what, 20 minutes in length, something like that?
Yeah, roughly.
And
there's chapters?
There are chapters. Each chapter is 2 or 3 segments, sometimes 4. I think 1 was 4.
And one was 1.
Was it? Which one was that?
I think towards the end, 24. 24, so 23.
I think that's probably enough, basic description of the series to get our discussion started. So what do we want to say about the story from there?
Well, I want to say quickly that, you know, there's a huge amount of military associations, and this is something that is definitely eaten up by the listeners, and there's a lot of discussions on the forums, and there's a wiki, and the We're Alive website is quite complete and quite chock full of much information, and there's a lot of information about the military, the vehicles, the survival gear, the food, the way that they outfit the tower, and actually the echelon, the military echelon, is very well respected in the story. And Angel is an officer, and Michael is a sergeant, and Saul is a specialist. And they, each of their specialties is very important and comes play into the story to a greater or lesser effect. Michael is in charge because that is his role, to be in charge on the field. And Angel is in charge, according to this military echelon sort of overall, but he really has to step back and let Michael handle, and then handle the events that are happening currently. So what's interesting is we get a lot of interplay between the personalities of these characters, the relationship between somebody who's a sergeant, as he called himself, he's a worker, he's a grunt guy, as opposed to an officer who's apparently of a more refined or richer stock, I suppose, you know, somebody that goes to West Point Academy as opposed to just getting drafted or something. Bert, actually, the actor who plays Bert is somebody that was in the military as well, if you look at his bio. So there's a lot of people with actual military experience. And I think one of the jokes at the beginning that gave me a chuckle was, you know, the people that would, the survivors that they encountered along the way were really great to see. But here are these guys in military garb, and they're driving a Hummer, and they're like, my God, the military's here. What? It's just you guys? And they're like, yeah, it's just right. Us. This is it.
They actually play with the tropes of authority. You know, we've got men in uniforms with military hardware. Obviously, they represent established authority. And the notion that there is a higher authority, there is a government, there is a military, it's going to come to the rescue. And people's hopes get, you know, buoyed for a second when they see that, and then they realize, oh, these guys are nearly as screwed as we are. Shoot. Later, it behooves the characters to hide the fact that they are in the military.
Right.
Right, right. And then there's, well, I'm at the very end, so I'm, you know, eagerly anticipating
bursting
chapter 26, and chapter 20, episode 25, chapter 3 ends on a delicious cliffhanger. I mean, it seems like it bodes not so well for our scraggly, measly survivor crew, but at the same time, it can go the other way, as cliffhangers are wont to do. So we have a lot of character development. We have a lot of we have a core group that gets established from the beginning, and they are equally divided in gender, which is interesting. And so that sets up sort of a romantic potential. And
we can have a hookup watch just like we do with
we have a hookup. By now, everybody that's hooked up has gotten hooked up. And then there are very interesting, subtle, nuanced subplots that work their way through that become liabilities or things that move the plot along. We've got a really great representation of the ethnic diversity of L.A. Without it being, you know, something that's happening under a banner of we are multicultural, look at us. So it's very realistic in that way, and I find myself sometimes getting a little bored with that realism. I want more zombies. And when the zombies do come into play, boy, are they scary and kind of almost a little too much for someone just wanting your regular Romero-type shambling zombies.
Well, I think that's funny that you would say you want more zombies, and then when they deliver the zombies, it's you maybe want less zombies. But I guess that's appropriate. I mean, you don't want it to be a monster that doesn't, you know, be monstery. The story starts off, and hopefully, you know, through the production of this episode of the Z Realm, we'll convince our listeners to give this thing a shot if they haven't already. And I would just like to say that if you started and you kind of go, well, yeah, this is good or whatever, but I don't really see what the big deal is, you know, keep listening because
the thing
hits a stride early on that is just amazing, and it keeps it up. And by the once you learn the characters and their sort of idiosyncrasies and their ins and outs, it just becomes that much more compelling. And it's as good a thing as I've found online. And you know, KMO, you were talking about your childhood history with radio dramas, or childhood, we'll say, but your younger experience. And, you know, I was very similarly interested in those as a means of getting stories. And like you also, I've listened to audiobooks, and I just want to make it very clear to the listeners that this is not an audiobook. And even an audiobook with high production values, like perhaps the World War Z, it's not the same thing. With World War Z, you still have a lot of people talking at you, and then moments where there's sound effects or other aspects that will come into the story to kind of give it weight. This is not that. This is people talking and things happening, and there's very little actual narrative. It's more of a story that takes place inside your head, in between your ears, that's just huge. It's just such an epic and huge and wonderful story with nuance. And I don't know. I don't know how much more praise I could ladle on it, but it's really, really excellent, and it does a thing that I haven't heard in years.
Another thing about a drama like this, an ongoing drama, is that it is ongoing. You know, you can have a great movie, but after 90 minutes or 2 hours, it's over.
Exactly.
But with something like this, you know, one, you can spend a lot of time with it getting caught up, you know, just immerse yourself in it. But then once you're caught up and you're having to wait 2 weeks for these little 20-minute segments, then it becomes, you really spend a lot of time with it because you spend a lot of time sort of rehearsing and rehashing and reviewing, you know, what's gone before. And then you can go to the forums if you're so inclined and talk to other people about it. And really it can take up as much of your cognitive real estate as you're willing to give over to it. Olga, what were you going to say?
I, too, really love listening to things. And I think I've expressed my love for that when we spoke about The Walking Dead, the AMC TV show, and how I got so much out of it when I was listening to it from the other room while it was playing out of my TV in a different room, because I feel that my imagination is filling in the words that I'm hearing is, for me and my experience, much richer and much more nuanced than anything that somebody else may present to me. And I, too, have a great amount of experience with audiobooks and lecture series, and I've done many, many road trips, like day-long, 18-hour drives from one end of the country, end of the country to the other, listening to a ton of audio. And whenever I'm out on the street and I walk a lot and I run a lot, I don't listen to music. I listen to podcasts. I listen to lectures. I listen to books on audiobooks. And I listen to, actually, when I can get it, a lot of old time radio drama, which unfortunately gets played on the local Pacifica radio station here in New York, WBAI, which is a great, great station. And various times I have listened to, you know, was it Hi-Ho Silver? I mean, I can't even, Gene Autry and just all of those really old, old radio dramas. And I mean, various times they will replay Orson Welles's War of Worlds, and then there was this guy who made these really cheesy radio dramas, and oh, I have to dig up his name, Justin Judd. I'll have to dig up his name, but they're really cheesy, they're really funny, and then there's all of these sort of murder and detective mysteries and superhero dramas, and they're great, and this is how people used to get their entertainment, and it's just. I think it's really wonderful that here are these young producers who are reanimating, shall we say, an old art form, an older art form, and something that has been dismissed and forgotten and ignored by the TV age. And now that we've been oversaturated with imagery, visual imagery, it's really refreshing to go back to this medium, and it's refreshing to see young people in L.A. in the business of providing visual entertainment, putting a lot of production value into something that inspires and creates imagination.
All day, or not all day, but all three of us today watched a YouTube video, which is a sort of behind-the-scenes making of We're Alive. And I was really not excited exactly, but just pleased to see, you know, the sophistication behind the show. It's not just, you know, five actors with scripts huddled around a microphone. They've got Foley artists and a Foley studio, and I think they said something like 30 to 60 hours of editing go into every episode.
That's like editing an episode of the Z-Realm.
It's huge.
The lines are flooded right now. Why don't you just take a seat and have a breather?
Hey, I knew getting into the vault was a mistake. You wouldn't listen. I'm the officer here.
Fuck you, sir, okay? If Michael hadn't, you wouldn't be here right now. I'd love to see you try and open the door while those things are chasing you down. I saw how fast you were with your rifle. You about shit your pants.
Don't you get it? They came because we opened it. They heard the alarm.
We don't know that for sure. Maybe they just followed the road, or maybe...
Think about it! You said they attacked the guy in the car behind you because he was honking. They must be attracted to loud sound.
So, you can understand them all of a sudden, huh? Well, maybe now you can step outside, you know, talk to them, and sort some of this shit out. Maybe you can just shut up.
It's enough, Saul.
One thing I did want to mention before it slips out of my head. Last week, you know, we said that some listeners who we forget exactly who they are had suggested that we check out We're Alive.
Right.
Lauren Key, who lives here in Tennessee and was a guest on a previous episode of this podcast, he burned a DVD for me with lots of different things on it. And I was looking through it, and I discovered that he had put the first 20-something episodes
of
We're Alive on that DVD for me. So I just want to send props out to Lauren Key for not necessarily getting us to do We're Alive, but he was one of the people that suggested it, for sure.
There was a note on iTunes. Someone had left a review saying, like, basically, good show. Y'all ought to check out the We're Alive podcast.
And also on Facebook. Well, I started listening to it first, I remember, because we were still mired in some other kind of zombie media. And I started listening to it because I drive around and like to listen to stuff talking at me, and I just got addicted. And, you know, I'd be streaming it through my Android device and listening to it on a headset, and it really helped me while away the hours when I'd be stuck in traffic trying to cross the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever. And it actually, the driving through industrial neighborhoods to warehouse parties and whatnot, it provided me with a really good soundtrack because parts of New York look like the zombie apocalypse has already happened.
You know, We're Alive, as we've mentioned, has got some authentic-sounding military research and knowledge that goes into it. And I was reminded of another zombie story from a few years back. It's called Day by Day Armageddon by J.L. Bourne. And it started out as a website, and I read the bits of it that were free on the website, which was several chapters of the book, or what later became a book. And I'm looking at that book on Amazon.com now. I see that it is available as an audiobook, as an MP3, or you can get it from Audible.com. And I also see that there is a sequel out. It's Day by Day Armageddon Beyond Exile, Book 2. So folks who are really into the military aspect of things, once you have exhausted We're Alive, you might check out Day by Day Armageddon by J.L. Bourne.
Very cool.
Very cool.
On a typical recording day, the crew will get there first, and we'll set up all the microphones, we'll set up all the equipment, we'll do sound checks, we'll do arrangements of everything just to make sure that when the actors are there, it's all perfect and set. Once the actors arrive, we pretty much go right into the recording stage.
And I gotta do some mic checks first.
Since everyone's familiar with the character, we don't really go into any rehearsal process, we just start rolling right into the chapter. During the recording, I'll usually stay inside this sound booth. As a director, I'm listening for different inflections, I'm listening for actors' performances, I'm listening for all the little intricacies that make the audio drama flow.
Well, joining us by Skype from Orange, California, we have the creator of the We're Alive podcast, or co-creator, I should say. Casey Whalen, welcome to the Z-Realm podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for approaching us. I'm guessing that you saw my post to the forum over there at We're Alive.
I did. You guys mentioned that you were talking about it, and I listened in, and I was like, hey, that'd be kind of fun to join in on that conversation and, you know, give some feedback directly from the story itself.
Wonderful. Well, if you've heard that episode, then you know about some of our fascinations and concerns around zombies. I know that Marty and Olga have both prepared questions, but before we get into those, let me just ask you, what's your fascination with zombies?
To be honest, and a lot of people are like, well, why did you choose zombies and things like that? it's not, I'm not a huge zombie, like, entrepreneur, if that makes any sense. It's just, it's a, kind of a medium and a device to tell the story that I'm telling, if that makes sense.
Well, Casey Whalen, thank you very much for joining us on the Z-Realm podcast, and we'll talk to you in the future. No, just kidding.
Well, I use the term zombie loosely because, I mean, even you guys were debating it, is what people define as what zombies are nowadays. It's just everyone has their own opinion, and it goes all over the board. So it's kind of like whoever you talk to at that time.
Well, I think that leads into Olga's first question. You want to take it from there, Olga?
Sure. I'm still laughing. You know, all three of us today watched that mini documentary that you have on your media page on the We're Alive, the Zombie Podcast website. And it's really informative and really well done. And in it, you speak about how this is not a horror piece. This is a character piece. And it's probably illuminating this disaffection that you may have for zombies. But I am interested in hearing about what your favorite zombie films or other media is, and which ones have you borrowed from, and maybe you could speak a little about that.
Okay. Well, some of them, for my influences, I'm a big fan of the more faster zombies, as apparent with the story that We're Alive. So I really love, one of my favorites of all time is the new Dawn of the Dead in 2004 by Zack Snyder. That's one of my favorites, just because it's a really up-to-date, commonality where you have real normal people stuck in a situation where a guy rises to the top who was a TV salesman. I mean, I like that, the characters behind it, and where you have some real, real dick people in there, and it has an element of realism to it that I really like. Zombieland, I think, is Zombieland, and of course, Shaun of the Dead. I mean, you have the comedies, zombies, but at the same time, there's still, you know, Zombieland, very fast, and then you have the other side of things, which is Shaun of the Dead, which is kind of slow shuffler, but it's still, you know, I love the comedic aspect to that. And then the most realistic, I think, and kind of one of the coolest tales is 28 Days Later. I just like the independent feel of that film and what they were able to do with it, you know, given their, you know, very limited budget and how they were, like, I think 28 Days Later was one of the, like, relaunches of the more modern-day zombies.
Something that 28 Days Later and Zombieland have in common is that the zombies, so-called, in those films are not undead, but they are people infected with viruses. And there's possibly some aspect of that in We're Alive.
Confirm or deny, I cannot. But, yeah, that could be very apparent in our story. We don't see any dead corpses rising, we'll just put it that way. We haven't seen anything like that where people have come out of the ground and we're alive. So if people want to think that it's some sort of virus or something, that might be a good theory.
Right, and there's plenty of characters who don't like to use the word zombie and are constantly shushing other people from using that word zombie.
I think there's if this were a real life scenario, a lot of people might actually consider not using the word because it's a lot of silly associations as well. And I think that was something that the characters kind of embody a little bit too, is like, you know, trying to keep it down to earth and real, if that makes sense.
Except you did name it the zombie survival story.
Yes, and that's if I'm to describe someone to the story, I'll use the term as well. A lot of it is because it gives you a real quick explanation of kind of what the story is about without having to get into huge amounts of detail. In one word, you can summate kind of what the idea of the antagonists are.
In the script for the original Night of the Living Dead, the word zombie does not appear. And in fact, George Romero credits the novel I Am Legend as a big inspiration for his script. So, they were ghouls, and it wasn't until Dawn of the Dead came around that he actually embraced the term zombie, and the word zombie appears all over the script for Dawn of the Dead.
I did not know that.
Right.
I know a little bit of background of the real-life zombies, and just there's a lot of really different culture aspects to, you know, the real-life ones from Haiti, and, you know, everyone's got their, oh, they were living, but they weren't, and that kind of thing.
Marty, what was your first question?
Well, I think where we are right now, talking about these cultural things, I think would be a perfect place to go back to something that we started talking about in the last episode of the Z-Realm, where we were talking about the Walking Dead television show on AMC and their sort of attempt to do a sort of Benetton ad of multiculturalism and, you know, these different races, different sort of, you know, backgrounds, and to display that on screen. And we were talking about how on We're Alive, a lot of that is left up to the listener to assign races to people or appearances or social looks, because, you know, so much of how we define somebody's social standing is by the clothes they wear or the, you know, whatever the words they use. So it's been a very interesting experiment to sort of look into my own thoughts and to see what the characters look like that I'm building as I'm listening to the show. And I was wondering how conscious you are, Casey, of those type of aspects of the different characters. Like, do you try to make it a point to make it clear that these characters might be a certain race or a certain religion or have a certain background?
I try to do that. It's a lot of it's a thin line between dancing, you know, trying to give the real ethnicity of somebody without going into stereotypical, you know, stereotype regions of how somebody might talk from a certain ethnicity. Like, mm-hmm. if like Datu, a lot of people struggle with that because of his accent and then Riley as well with her accent as well. I mean, those are they're real accents, but at the same time, it's like you have to make sure that it's not it's a hard term to define, if that makes sense. Like Saul is like part African American, but how do I have that come across in the story without like trying to draw attention to it?
Or, right.
Like at the same time, a lot of people, like when they see the characters who voice the actors, are like, "Well, I never got the idea that person was of that ethnicity." And right. And I'm fine with that. If people want to associate their own visions with the character, you know, that's fine. Sometimes it comes up, sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And in terms of writing for these characters, I try and establish a lot of that ahead of time. Like every single character has like a different religious and ethnic background. And okay. A lot of times it's not really talked about in the story because it's not as relevant to what's going on.
I have to say that with We're Alive, it seems a lot less forced than with The Walking Dead. As Marty says, The Walking Dead does come across as a United Colors of Benetton ad sometimes. And it's not so with The Walking Dead.
I think maybe part of that has to do with the fact that it's California and Los Angeles, because, I mean, we are very integrated here with all different nationalities, and it's just a different culture, but people are just, you know, so mixed. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, you just get used to it. I don't know where to be honest, I don't know much about The Walking Dead because I have avoided it by all measures. Both on a subconscious level and as a creative level, because I don't want to have anything come over, you know, the fence, if that makes sense.
No, that's great.
I have a question regarding that. Have you not read the Walking Dead graphic novel series then?
No, I haven't read anything from Walking Dead at all.
Wow.
Not the series, nothing.
How about World War Z?
World War Z either.
Wow.
A lot of these things, I know people are like, well, you're writing all these zombie things. How can you not read this stuff? And I'm like, well, exactly. I'm writing this stuff, and I try to put original ideas of myself in it, and I don't want to take from something somebody else has already established. Now, there's some things I can't ignore that I've already seen, both movies and things beforehand, but I just, you know, have to be very careful. And I know I can be influenced subliminally by these things, so I'm like, you know, just avoid them.
That's great. I think that's excellent. That really makes a lot of sense because the story is so fresh and is so consistently surprising and not in some cheap way. It is a higher caliber than I would expect in any sort of format. And to hear that you're avoiding these other things, I think that explains a lot about why it is so just completely engrossing. And I cannot tell you what's going to happen next week. I have no idea. And I just cannot wait to hear what happens next week. So,
well, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
And then mission accomplished.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do a really good job in keeping the listener's attention and I'm fascinated by all of the open-ended storylines. They're like mines buried throughout the whole story. I mean, from this point on, you can pretty much not go forward and keep people's attention just exploring all the tributaries that are just left wide open, that people are constantly, obsessively writing about on the forums. So I'd like to ask you, how much of the story is written? And are you as much in the shadows about future developments as the addicted listeners? And are there any gleanings from the forums that you may check into that contribute to the continuous writing of the story?
Okay, so I'll start from the beginning, from that one. The story is outlined from beginning to end. It has all the major arcs and plot points in the series are all planned out. They're pretty much set in stone. Some things have been moved around in terms of timing. As I go on, I'm writing two chapters at a time, full-fledged scripts. And the reason I do that progressively as the story goes on is it gives me a lot of time to work on the scripts, because they're being produced and I'm writing it as we're recording. And also it gives me a lot of fluidity to work with the actors not so much experiment, but depending on an actor's, what they bring to the story, because we can't cast the whole series from the very beginning. So as a new character is brought on, sometimes it's like you can organically change what happens based on just their performances and stuff. And I think by doing that, you get a lot of, you know, some flexibility. And that's how TV shows are written, too. So I was like, okay, well, I'll kind of do that and see how it goes. How much is in the shadows? I'm definitely not in the shadows at all. Every little detail is either in my head, on paper. There are some areas that aren't completely set in stone, obviously, just because I you know, play with a lot of different, you know, oh, I'll take out this piece or put this piece back in. But all the stuff that's already been put into the scripts for the first two seasons are already there. Where their answers are going to come up is already, like, planned out. So there's a lot of, you know, just going through the motions of, okay, now we're to this part and now we're to this part, so to speak. Wow. The forums themselves, they do influence me, but they influence me in a positive way, because what they do is if I put something in the story and nobody gets it or somebody doesn't catch on to a really big hint that I put in that I thought was big, it was actually maybe minuscule, I might actually go through and make it a little clearer in a later chapter, or maybe make it a little bit more explicit to somebody who might have missed it, only because I can kind of see what's working, what's not, based on the reactions of some of the, because this is kind of a murder mystery in a way, and I can see what clues people are missing and then kind of maybe like, oh, I'll put this one a little bit bigger or something like that. So it gives me a lot of freedom to, you know, engage with the audience and, you know, hear what they're listening for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'd be curious to hear about the military aspects of it. I mean, your three main characters to start with are all soldiers, and you yourself have experience. So if you would say a little bit about that aspect.
Okay. Well, they always say write what you know. And the one thing I do know is I know a lot of technical stuff because I'm very I'm an engineer by trade, but I was also an engineer in the military. So I had a lot of, like, it was mixed, you know, combat technical. Constantly, every single time I was going out there, I was deployed overseas into Baghdad in 03 and 04, and got to experience like some of these really high tension situations and how people react and how people live in these worlds. And that was one of the inspirations for where the story kind of came from, was seeing how people react and work at the edge of, you know, working on the edge of their life, possibly. They don't know if today would be the last day or the next day, kind of thing. And it's in a way, it's kind of fascinating to see what people do and how they react. And it's kind of that element of humanity that I kind of try and inject into it sporadically throughout the story of people going through these horrific things.
Well, hearing you say that makes me think of one of the things we frequently say on the Z Realm, and what we'll say is that the zombie, as a villain and as a sort of idea and a meme, can represent so much stuff, because it can be this sort of universal villain. It can represent this and represent that. And so you'd already mentioned earlier that the zombie in this particular story was just a sort of a great villain, because, you know, everybody knows what it is with just the mention of the word. You know, it's such a part of our sort of cultural understanding. But is there any particular, I mean, other than just a shambling horde of flesh eaters, is there anything that in this story that you try to model the zombies after, or that it might represent to you, that goes beyond just as a villain?
Yeah, the zombies themselves can be as, you know, it could be perceived as simple as just good versus evil for them, and they're the antagonists. The people themselves in the story, I use a lot of like social commentaries and a lot of scenarios that the people go through. I use as devices for, you know, those sorts of things. Yes. For instance, like very specifically in chapter 19, there is a full body search, and where it felt just very wrong that they felt even though it's a safety measure, they felt very violated that mm-hmm. they had to go through these things. That was actually like a commentary for me about TSA at the time. Okay. And these full body scanners of people going through airports. Sure, it's a security thing, but at what point does it become too much? And so people can take that as they will, however they for or against whatever, you know, because they'd be like, well, hey, we have to make sure they're safe before we get inside. So, I mean, people can take it as they want. The PEG's non-acceptance of guns, that's another, you know, commentary of, you know, people may look at guns as something that are completely dangerous, and other people will look at them as, okay, this is the means for survival. It's just... These commentaries that come about through the story I use through the humans because they're the most relatable. I mean, if I was to tell a story and try and analyze it through the zombies, it maybe wouldn't come across as much.
Gotcha.
Well, I'd like to compliment you because listening to it, I never think, oh, here is the political axe grinding. You know, oh, here's the message. It really just seems as though the primary motivation of everybody involved is to create a really engaging radio drama.
Yeah, there's not really any sort of, like, political message. I'm not trying to cram any sort of, like, that was something that I see in a lot of survival films that I specifically avoided in this one. That was the note of religion. And that was something that I, you know, specifically didn't, I touch on it here and there in the story, but not a whole lot because I think when people start to try and have any perspective of it, they're going to get preachy either way. So I try and, you know, just get to the base of the people in these situations and try and make it as human as possible. And there is, you know, religious background to people, but I don't try and, like, make that a central focus.
Casey, you mentioned that you were not exactly a zombie aficionado, certainly not the sort of zombie geek that we here in the Z-Realm are. But what does the zombie apocalypse represent to you? What sort of allegorical work does it do?
Somebody asked me that recently, and I kind of did a lot of thinking about it because I thought, okay, well, why is this something that's very popular? And I think one of the biggest reason is current economic conditions. And that might be some weird political answer that people are thinking, but I think a lot of people are living in a world right now where it's like, it's very stressful. I mean, the world is generally getting more and more complicated to live in. I myself am inundated with different things that come in the mail every day. It's like, oh, taxes just seem to get more and more complicated. I mean, you have more and more stuff to worry about. Bills, as technology increases, all of a sudden now we have to pay more and more. And I think somewhere deep down inside, people are like yearning for that world that doesn't have any of that anymore. It's like people's getaway fantasy now in sort of a modern day depression where it's like, hey, look, the zombie world. No one's got any bills. They don't have mortgages to take care of. They can do whatever they want. And whatever they put into the world, they're going to directly get out of it. So if they're ultimate survivalists that just like to get their own food and provide for themselves again, it's like almost we're in a way yearning for a de-evolution of, you know, a social norm. And I think that's something that people can get behind, given the fact that a 9-to-5 job, you know, if you did that your entire life, what is it anymore?
You know, it's funny. A character in the movie Platoon said pretty much the same thing. He said, you know, back in the world, I have all of these things to worry about. Here, the only thing I have to worry about is staying alive, you know, and if I take care of that, everything else is easy.
Yeah, that's very much the same embodiment of just, you know, living for the day. And that's a very, you know, it's almost a fantasy concept of, you know, I'd love that to happen, but in reality, come back down and, you know, write that checkbook out.
You know, you mentioned financial stresses. I'm reading a book right now called Debt, The First 5,000 Years by David Graeber. And I came across a quote in it that was so relevant to our zombie interests that I posted it to our blog. And I just want to read it to you. It's just a couple sentences. Horror stories, whether about vampires, ghouls, or flesh-eating zombies, always seem to reflect some aspect of the teller's own social lives, some terrifying potential in the way they are accustomed to interact with each other, that they do not wish to acknowledge or confront, but also cannot help but talk about. And zombies are so popular these days. Let me share one other quote. This is from John Michael Greer. He's a Peak Oil blogger that I follow. He writes, "The thing that's got me thinking hard about vampires and zombies is that they're both ways of romanticizing death. And it's a very curious thing that so many people should be pursuing that right now." And these two quotes taken together are pretty telling. We are fascinated by zombies, and stories like this allow us to talk about things that we don't give ourselves permission to talk about. And you've already mentioned some of the things that, you know, you can use this storyline and this trope to talk about, but is there anything else that comes to mind, that why so many people should be fascinated with this sort of imagery right now?
Not so much. I'm not too sure that this is, I mean, the fascination with death and the romanticizing of it, I'm not too keen on that topic. I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of, as much as death is something that we have to deal with, it's definitely not something that I ever want to try and glorify in a story. It's not something where I ever would think that, you know, killing the faceless zombie is not somebody who is, you know, I don't want you to feel for the zombies in any way. But at the same time, it's like those everybody else who's in the story, most definitely, whether they're good or bad, they're still human. And I think that there's still, you know, some emotional portrayal to it. And that's something that I also like try to do a lot with chapter 12. I mean, not to try spoilers, yes, but when the character Latch, who's not on the good guy's side, is shot, it destroys one of the other characters, and it's something that she has to live with from then on. And it's not something that is ever easy. So I never would want to promote those sorts of things. But that's yeah. Well, there it is. If that makes any sense.
You know, some people are big fans of splatter and gore. You know, there are magazines devoted to it, like Gore Zone and Fangoria. And with a radio drama like this, you get to do something that could be really gross, you know, involves piles of bodies and whatnot, but you don't actually, you don't get to linger on that imagery, which I know you like. I mean, you like to avoid it.
Yeah, I do. I don't like, and this is, even with the imagery that we use for We're Alive, I don't like anything that's like the super gory, blood-dripping zombies. I don't, that doesn't give anything or add anything to the story. It just goes to the reasoning of force, the violence is never scary. It's the threat of violence that is the most, like, horrifying. So the image that we have that's pretty much our like icon for We're Alive is the guy at the end of the hall. He's not doing anything, but in the scene that he is and the formidable threat that he is, that is could be terrifying. And that's the angle that I like for the story. And if we ever cross a medium, I would definitely want that to come across, because the overdramatic gore is not something that definitely is not the story.
Is there anything in the works to adapt We're Alive to a different medium?
It's been in the talks for a while of jumping different ships and making different things happen. At the moment, no. I'm kind of when this show is going, have to focus on it 100% because I have an 8-to-5 job normally. So I go to work, I come home, I work on the show, and I do that every single week.
Wow.
And weekend. And it's to the point where it's like I don't have the time to pursue another medium because I very much would be controlling of it and want to make sure that it's done right, and I don't have the time for it.
Wow. I've heard a couple intakes of breath as if somebody was about to ask a question.
I'm just saying wow a lot. Because I'm sorry.
Well, I wanted to pick up the thread a little bit on what we were just talking about the zombie apocalypse scenario, the zombie apocalypse meme, the fact that it is a metaphor for a collapsing society, the breakdown of industrial consumer society and what we are used to. And, you know, on the one hand, on the other hand, you've described the one hand, the zombie apocalypse is kind of like a macabre fascination. It's like watching a train wreck because, you know, life is really difficult here in the real world, and there are a lot of confusing issues, and everybody's got a different opinion, and yet, you know, everybody tunes into the zombie apocalypse, and it's like, wow, they got it so much worse over there, you know? Like, my life is really simple compared to what they have to put up with. And I find it really fascinating how you are dealing with describing the zombies, because as a fan, as a listener, I am riveted to any description of the zombies and any description of what life is like outside the tower. And you dole it out so sparingly that it's like, it's just, you know, leading me along on this, you know, like trail of drool, bloody drool. And it's very expertly done because I have to say, I am not a big fan of character dramatic development. Could be in my personality flaw, and I kind of feel like I'm sitting through all of the tower scenes, and then when they leave the tower and they're out and about and they're describing the animals and they're describing the different zombies and they're describing the traffic, the dead cars, the dead traffic, that's when my ears are really pricked up and I'm just trying to soak it all in.
It's intentional to include both, where there's a fine balance between there's action sequences and dramatic sequences and the mystery horror sequences. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, trying to make sure it's all balanced, but very much so we're trying to, at the same time, give you a taste of what it is, but at the same time, I don't want to overemphasize, you know, over-describe what's going on in the background, because with this, with an audio drama especially, it's not a book. I'm giving you not only, you know, the characters experience situations, sometimes you get a voiceover, but you're also getting the audio, and the rest is kind of up to you to fill in the blanks. And, cause the imagination is part of this process of audio. It's something where we can, it's the halfway point between movies and, you know, books. We're gonna give you a perspective, pacing and all of this. You just have to take it the rest of the way.
Well, Casey, I know that you are a big fan of radio dramas or audio dramas, and we have used up the half an hour that you said was on offer to us. So I'd like to invite you just to close up the discussion by saying something a little bit about what your fondest hopes are in terms of getting people to use their imaginations again.
Okay, well, with We're Alive, especially in all other audio dramas, this is something that, I mean, a lot of people are doing things visual nowadays, and this is a medium that has been long since dead for a while. People, you know, the books and movies have overcome, but this is an area that it is the in-between where people can really go forth and give something to the story with their imaginations and get involved and really immerse themselves without having to open their eyes. And that's something that I'd love people to get out of the story and people to come and be like, oh, hey, I've never discovered an audio drama before. This is my first one and I love it. From here, even gone to books on tape, just because I like the idea that I can continue, my body can continue going while my mind is, you know, wandering the streets.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, Casey Whalen, thank you very much for joining us here in the Z Realm, and we will all be paying very close attention to the remainder of your audio story. It's just been a marvel for us.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
So that was our interview with Casey Whalen, who spoke to us from his day job office out of L.A., and we definitely love talking about zombies with people who are getting paid to talk about zombies, so that was great. It was great. We had a lot of fun, and it was wonderful speaking to one of the creative brains behind this production. And one of the things that we find interesting and funny is that Casey's really not interested in zombies.
Not particularly interested anyway.
Not particularly interested in zombies, and it's a novelistic device, and it's a trope, and it's a great It's a great villain. And this series has a lot of different kinds of zombies, and they're very well cataloged on the forums, and there's a lot of discussion and theorizing about what they are, where they come from, when they appear, what are they up to, what their genesis is, and it's wonderful to hear Casey say, well, maybe they're not even zombies. Who knows? But here on the Zeron podcast, we like to talk about zombies, and we like to discuss the different kinds of zombies. And do you guys want to talk about the different zombies that are on this?
Well, I think it's safe to say that they're not zombies, you know, maybe per se, but they're definitely zombie-ish. And they firmly fit within the sort of very broad spectrum of zombie, you know, that definition. So I think, you know, obviously he doesn't want to say maybe they're zombies, maybe they're not, because he doesn't want to limit what they are or anything, but they clearly are part of that, like I said, that broad spectrum definition of that thing. Are either of you as surprised as I am that Casey has a day job and then does the podcast as a sideline?
Nope, I'm not surprised.
I was surprised with the amount of time that goes into that. I thought there was no way that could be a side project.
Life in L.A. is expensive, man.
But wow.
Yeah.
That just makes it that much more impressive to me that this is something that's done also.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
Yeah. Well, they have a cast. They have a crew. I mean, they're interns. Because I'm quite impressed with the marketing that this production is doing. In addition to putting out the show, they're doing a lot of marketing to promote the show with their website, with their various T-shirt giveaways and prizes, and you know, the poster prize that's happening right now, poster contest that's happening right now, their Facebook presence. You know, they're quite savvy in that department.
So why aren't we doing that?
we're just getting, you know, we're late bloomers. We're getting going with it.
Yeah.
Ours is a much more obscure, you know.
That's right. It's got to keep our nerd
elite kind of subcultural phenomenon, you know.
Yeah, we're too smart to make money.
People have to unearth us and be kind of proud to be part of a select few.
Of a subgenre, subset, subhuman sort of situation.
I noticed that in the early episodes, you know, they had commercials. But one of the early advertisers, and I guess this bespeaks of what an effective advertisement as it was Reef Systems, Inc., which was an aquarium company.
Right.
Yes. You remember that.
I don't think that you're going to support a cast of a dozen with, you know, some Foley artists and recording engineers and whatnot with advertisements for an aquarium maintenance company. And I noticed that in the more recent episodes, they don't always have advertising, and sometimes the advertisements are for podcasts which are no bigger or more prominent than this one. And, you know, how much could we possibly afford to pay for advertising?
Well, yeah, very little.
Okay, so this is not much of a spoiler alert because we're talking about advertising, but in the most recent few chapters, in the most recent few episodes, we are back to sponsors, and they are heavy-hitting sponsors. We have a gun shop called Locked and Loaded, all right, that's advertising in this very commando-type voice, and I actually recognize the actors, and Bert makes an appearance in this ad. And this is like, hey, you're listening to the zombie survival story, come on in and get your survival gear. You know?
Well,
so,
in episode 21, they're advertising a pen and paper and dice zombie game through...
I love that! The zombie reality game! The zombie, wait a minute, role-playing game!
Yeah. That's not exactly, you know, Coca-Cola advertising or Ford Motor Company or something.
Oh, no. But it's still awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I haven't said anything in the whole course of this podcast to detract from We're Alive, because I just dig it.
Yeah, I dig it, too. I wish we could talk a little bit more about individual instances in the episodes. Maybe we'll have to do that next time, but...
Well, maybe we can give our listeners, a few weeks to get caught up, and once the rest of season two of The Walking Dead has run its course and we've done all those shows, we can come back to it and say,
yeah,
well, you've had your fair warning in terms of spoilers, folks, so here we go into an in-depth discussion of this, that, and the other.
If we throw up a great big warning that there are spoilers coming, I think we could get away with it. I just didn't want to do it just blam, here's a bunch of spoilers,
yeah,
and you know, and ruin something for somebody.
I agree.
I love spoilers. I usually read the end of something and then go back and read it from the beginning. Yeah, I can't stand not knowing what's going to happen.
See, I'm the more stick my fingers in my ears and go, nah, 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 I'm not listening to you. I can't
no.
hear anything.
No, I'm exactly that way.
No. I like to know, and then I forget, and then when I read it again, I go, oh, that's right.
You're just a weirdo.
That's right.
Well, listeners, you probably have heard us give the email address for feedback before, and I know it's a Yahoo address, but I can't even bring it to mind right now, but things have just gotten simpler. If you want to send email to me and Marty and Olga with one fell swoop, just type into the to line of your favorite email client, mail@zrealm.com, and that is the letter Z like zombie, and then a dash, and then realm.com. That will generate three separate emails. It will go to all three co-hosts with the push of one virtual button on your screen.
Which means don't write something to me that says, like, geez, could you get KMO to be quiet? Because he will see it. So everybody that's been sending me all those emails that say that, stop.
Stop.
It's an impossible tank. We've tried and failed and tried and failed. And decided we like it.
How about other media? I'm excited about Prometheus. Oh, my goodness. Marty, do you want to
fill the
listeners in on that? What's that, she says. Marty?
She said a thing that I can't even believe she said.
I know.
Prometheus.
Why do
Prometheus
I not know about this?
Yeah, I think you do know, and when we say what it is, you'll go, oh, that.
See? Swift teeth of brains. It's great.
Prometheus is Ridley Scott's follow-up to Alien.
Oh,
it's
yeah!
Yeah, that. But, it's coming this summer. Yeah, you clearly can't wait. You couldn't wait so hard that you forced yourself to forget about it.
I'm telling you. It keeps the world exciting for me.
But it does look completely excellent. It looks like, Ridley Scott is very carefully avoiding saying that it's a sequel or a prequel or directly related, but it very clearly is directly related. I mean, the stuff that they've shown from in the trailers is directly from Alien, and they're, you know, having just rewatched that, it's even clearer in my mind that that's the case. But, it looks really excellent, and the thing that gets me the most excited about it is that it is an ancient astronaut's story.
Oh, yeah, it deals with the origins of mankind.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to Star Wars, a porn parody.
Oh, excellent.
Say more about that.
I don't know more about that, except that it stars Allie Hayes, who's wearing some kind of diaphanous white gown that looks like a hospital gown with, like, a huge slit up the back, I think. And it's supposedly a pretty high production value, very close to the story, porn parody being produced by... And KMO, you'll know the answer to this. What's the house that's producing it? Vivid Pictures, you think? Yes.
Vivid, okay.
Vivid Pictures, who's one of the biggies in the porn industry, is producing this, and I think that I don't know if they have the blessing of George Lucas, or they're just like being walking on eggshells around the whole thing to try not to offend him. So maybe that's why the title is a porn parody and not just like straight up porn. And there's a trailer. I saw it. Somebody posted it on Facebook, and I reposted it. And it's pretty clean trailer, and mostly has an interview with Allie Hayes in it. And
I was really interested though. You said it was mostly clean.
It was mostly clean. Yeah, I don't know. But that's the trailer. The trailer is mostly clean. The trailer is very clean. And then there is a crowdsourced remake of Star Wars, that I found as well online. That's pretty awesome too. And that's basically it was a project. I think it lasted for several years where people sent in a 12-second snippet of the story. 15 seconds. And so you get all kinds. You get, you know, claymation and what are those?
The Lego Star Wars figures.
The Legos, right. And
people like just wrapped in, you know, foil for C-3PO, or they just have a paper map in front of them. And, you know, it just shifts every 15 seconds. It looks completely different, except it's a shot-for-shot remake of Star Wars, so you recognize every instant of it. Pretty fun. Well,
that's completely awesome.
I sent you that email. Yeah, it's awesome.
And then Star Wars The Clone Wars Season 4, their mid-season hiatus is over, and wow, it's just awesome. I just love it. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Episodes 1, 2, and 3, their primary value is that they provided the production design for Star Wars The Clone Wars, the animated show on the Cartoon Network. I can't speak highly enough about it.
I would like to propose a little game where we try to figure out what they might say be with you in the porn parody of Star Wars. Obviously, it won't be the fork, but I think it could be something pretty funny. Olga, what do you think?
May the forceful be with you. May the force be inside you. What?
May the foreskin be with
you. Oh no, that's
gross. That work.
I just got the Spaceballs parody stuck in my head now.
Me the what? Oh, the
Schwartz.
Big
as mine.
Yeah, because there's nothing. There's no like penile joke going on there. That's not what that is. No.
Okay.
They're way too highbrow for that.
I just have to say on the Star Wars porn parody episode 4, A New Hope. Basically, there's only one chick in the whole flick, so my hopes are not quite as high for that one as maybe for some later episodes. But, you know, you've got to get into episodes 1, 2, and 3 before you get more than one female character.
Well, they could always cast some Tusken Raiders or something as women and have them, you know, some sexy Tusken Raiders. I think that might be kind
of... woman and a whole bunch of guys? I don't have a problem with that. Bring it on. Sounds like paradise.
Yeah. This is where we segue into our new show. No, I'm just kidding.
It's got the sexy 70s guitar soundtrack. It's pretty awesome.
This is getting risque. I say we wrap it up. Well, that is enough rambling for one episode of the Z-Realm podcast, but we are inveterate ramblers, so fear not. We will be rambling at you again soon. But until we do, remember, keep your shotgun handy, and when you shoot, aim for the head.
None of us would say it, but we feared what we might find outside the gate. For the first time in a long time, I was afraid. Not for what might happen to me, but what happened to the world. We were three men lost in a land of confusion.